Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
Well, if we're doing Bob Seger, it means we're going to talk about Michigan at some point here. Welcome back to the third hour. I'm Pat Whitelow. And let's see, who's over here? Oh, it's Carolyn Fiddler. There she is. Hey.
Hello.
Political editorial director for Courier Newsroom. I've been engaged in some shameless self-promotion that today's my third anniversary with Courier Newsroom.
Oh, exciting. That's right. I feel like I saw that somewhere.
Yep. To fire up the machine that would become Up North News on the first day of 2020. And we all saw what happened to the world after that. So, you know, I guess we'll take some of the blame. Carolyn gives us a newsletter each week called This Week in State House Action, which is a good review of what's happening in the states politically, I guess electorally as well, given the time of year that it is.
Oh, yeah.
And are you still working on this week's?
I am, actually. Yesterday was a little bonkers, so late start, and still polishing it up. But it's pretty straightforward this week, just more or less a rundown of chambers and states to watch in terms of whether Democrats are playing defense and offense, how close those margins are, just things to keep an eye on since we're less than a month out. And also this week, 10th anniversary of my newsletter.
Okay, see, say shameless self-promotion is... is what we're getting at here. Yeah. Now, last week's edition was the big crossover edition with the For What It's Worth folks. So it was data galore, or data lore, I think is what you ended up calling it.
Right, which is a Star Trek reference.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, so we got to look at where attention is being paid to legislative races, you know, that are trying to compete with gubernatorial and congressional elections. And, you know, what was your takeaway in terms of, you know, whether one party or the other or certain groups or others are, you know, being more aggressive in targeting any one of those particular types of races?
Well, it turns out that Democrats are being a little more aggressive about digital ad spending this time around than I expected, which is very gratifying. In Michigan, especially, they've been pretty aggro, which is great because Michigan is one of those states where Democrats have a shot at picking up either the House or the Senate this year. So,
Well, since we've mentioned Michigan twice now, that leads me right into the one soundbite that I wanted to share. I don't have a lot of the details on how the rest of the debate went, but it appears Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the Democratic incumbent, debated her Republican challenger, Tudor Dixon. And I saw this clip on social media I wanted to share simply because it is a how-to on how to talk about gun safety. And so, Aaron, let's listen to what Governor Gretchen Whitmer had to say.
The same month as the Oxford school shooting, where four children were murdered, eight were injured, and the community was terrorized, Tudor Dixon posted on her social media a picture of her shooting a gun with the caption that said, "Gun control means using both hands. She is too dangerous and too out of touch to be trusted with protecting our kids. She'll put the Second Amendment before second graders every time. We cannot let that happen."
I mean, there
it is.
That's
good.
Yes.
Second Amendment for second graders.
Second Amendment ahead of second graders. I mean, there's how many different ways have we tried to say, you know, standing with mass shooters rather than, you know, saving the lives of our kids? And, you know, it's true, given all the second graders, sadly, who have been slaughtered over time. So Whitmer
whoever came up with that deserves a raise. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
As a communications professional, like, I am super impressed.
Yeah. And she's always been a good debater, you know, a good speaker. And frankly, clearly a lot of people think she's been a good governor based on how the polling has gone. And as you said, you know, from a legislative standpoint in Michigan, Dems need to flip just two House seats out of 110 to take control and four seats out of 38. So, you know, you note here, it's one of the rare states without GOP gerrymandered maps. I didn't think that happened anymore.
Somehow it did. You know, the only reason it did was because the citizens of Michigan put a measure on the ballot back in 2018 that created this independent redistricting commission that took the process right out of the hands of politicians. And that's how we got these maps.
See, it comes back to that, again, that whole notion of initiative and referendum that we don't have in Wisconsin, that Ron Johnson is hiding behind, saying, well, we should have a referendum, you know, in Wisconsin, knowing full well we can't. It's not in state law for that. Governor Evers says, fine, let's do it. And Republicans in the state legislature say, no, we don't want to do that because we're seeing what's happening in Michigan over here.
Yep, they love their gerrymandered maps. They rely on them. They sleep with them under their pillow at night.
I mean, we say all the time, you know, how badly gerrymandered it is here, that it is among, if not the worst in the nation. Is there another state that you would hold up as an example of, you know, Democrats just don't have a prayer because of the way the maps are drawn?
Ohio,
of course. Oh, yeah. and in that one, aren't they like blatantly?
Yeah, they're just ignoring their own Supreme Court. They're like,
ignoring their Supreme Court.
They're like, we'll just run on these maps anyway because we feel like it. And Republicans are running the show at every level of state government in Ohio. So who's going to say no? The Supreme Court's like, don't do that. And the Republicans are just like, what if we did?
It's like, you know, whose line is it anyway? You know, where the points don't matter. You know, everything's made up.
Yes.
And that's what we're dealing with here. We'll talk more about this week in politics around the state with Carolyn Fidler, political editorial director for Courier Newsroom, coming up in just a bit. First, remember, shameless self-promotion is the theme today. Why don't you get our newsletter? A daily newsletter we put out every day. Go to upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner. We'll be back. You're up north. If we're going yacht rock, Michael McDonald, Carolyn Fidler must be in the building, or at least virtually. In a room someplace, joining us from the D.C. Area, Arlington, Virginia, talking about state house action all around the country. In her newsletter last week, Carolyn said, remember last week when I predicted the GOP-controlled Wisconsin legislature would gavel out in 20 seconds after convening a special session that Democratic Governor Tony Evers called with the admittedly pie-in-the-sky goal of letting voters propose and decide on a ballot measure enshrining reproductive freedom in the state constitution? Well, I was wrong, Carolyn wrote. After convening the session, the state Senate gaveled out after 15 seconds. Price is Right rules. I lose. No, Carolyn, it's your newsletter. You don't need Price is Right rules. 15 seconds versus 20 works for me. You won.
That's very generous.
I can't believe I
overshot it, though. It's amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, never underestimate what Robin Voss and company are willing to do. And to that end, there's been a new filing as the January 6th committee pushes back against Voss and his efforts to avoid testifying about his conversations with former President Donald Trump since the January 6th election. Voss was subpoenaed in September for his testimony. And let's see, what we learned is that there have been 2 weeks of failed negotiations between the committee and the Republican to get his voluntary participation, according to recent federal court filings. And that's a new story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Molly Beck. I don't know the degree, Carolyn, to which you follow any of that and whether there are other state officials that are, you know, caught up in the committee. I mean, we remember hearing about the Arizona, was it the Speaker of their House who lost his primary, you know, after he testified to the January 6th committee. So, I mean, state officials have been part of it. It hasn't just been Trump administration people who've been part of the committee's work.
It's correct. There were a lot of state-level insurrectionists that the Trump campaign reached out to directly. These lawmakers who they were hoping would, you know, put forward these fake electors or somehow, in some other way, take steps to overturn that free and fair election. So, yeah, it was really all the way down the ballot. It was those of us watching really understood that there was a real threat that GOP state legislatures posed to democracy.
And that's where Voss is trying to have it both ways. He's walking this tightrope because he has seen what happened to the Arizona Speaker of the House. He has seen what has happened to Liz Cheney losing her seat in Congress. He has certainly seen the heat that Georgia Republicans took by not just finding votes, you know, the way that Trump wanted them to in that infamous phone call that should have led to immediate impeachment and removal from office right at that point. So, yeah, Voss is trying to, you know, essentially play footsie with the Donald, but not do everything that he wants, even though I don't doubt plenty of Wisconsin Republican legislators would actually like that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, state lawmakers in most states, especially states where that don't have term limits on their state legislators, play the long game. They know that Trump won't be around forever. Maybe things will get worse. Maybe it'll be someone more awful later, but they know that Trump is not going to outlast them. Robin Voss wants to be one of the most powerful Republicans in Wisconsin for a long time yet, I bet. So they have to play footsie, but they don't want to go, you know, all in that pond with a very bad person.
He has served longer than any other assembly speaker in Wisconsin history, and yeah, it has essentially become, you know, our boss tweed, if you will, you know, and wants to be, but can't be that kingmaker and that campaign maker if he's constantly being belittled by a former president. So yeah, he's trying to outlast him there.
And the primary threats are real, even in a deep red district like his. He knows he has, there are threats on the right if he defies Donald Trump.
And there is an independent candidate in his district running. So it is conceivable that if that independent, you know, and or the Democrats siphon off enough votes that Voss could still lose his seat. You know, it's going to be a wild night.
That's true.
And I don't mean in the Steve Bannon way from that tape that we heard yesterday.
Yeah. You know?
Wow. I mean, that was what really caught you in that? Was it the, you know, Nancy Pelosi being huddled in the Capitol? Was it, you know,
that
something
was wild.
I know. I didn't even ask if you were in, were you in the DC area back then?
I was watching, you know, everything unfold on my TV in real time. I have friends in the press corps. I knew a lot of people in the building that day. It was, and I feared for their lives. Literally, it was terrifying.
Yeah. We've been going over a few of the states just to, you know, get a feel for what we might hear on Election Day and beyond. And Carolyn, turning to Nevada, it was one of those that was always considered a pretty safe Democratic state. You had Harry Reid, you know, as the senator from there for the longest time. But, you know, much like Wisconsin, you know, northern Wisconsin had Dave Obey for 42 years. And then, you know, upon his retirement, it was like engulfed in a sea of red. You know, the legislative seats were all making progress that way anyway. Are Democrats in danger of losing the hold they've had on Nevada for some time?
They are. It's at risk. A danger, I feel like, is overselling it a little bit. But Nevada, you know, below the Harry Reid level, is not that safely blue. It's not that long ago they had a Republican governor, and it wasn't, you know, within the past decade, Republicans have run that state legislature. So it's not, you know, people calling Nevada safely blue is like a little bit like people calling Virginia safely blue, which people who know Virginia knew it wasn't. And Nevada is, I think, trending a little bluer than Virginia, but still, both parties are making big plays there to either keep or pick off a good Democratic trifecta.
Yeah, meanwhile, there are, you know, again, we don't get to enjoy battles in Wisconsin for control of the legislature because of the rigged map. So we're just enjoying talking about other states that do. And that takes us to Arizona, where Dems need to flip just 2 seats out of 60 to take back the House. And they need to flip just 1 seat in the state Senate to tie the chamber at 15 apiece. I don't even have a good question. It's just so nice to talk about competitive, you know,
it's
races.
It's
for
harder
the
than it looks, though. Like, the numbers make Arizona look like not a big lift. It's actually a bigger lift than it looks like. The maps that came out of that state's Independent Redistricting Commission were not quite as fair as a lot of observers had hoped. The Republican governor there stacked the committee that picks the folks for the Independent Redistricting Committee. So there was a really good long game played by Republicans there. Yeah. So they got maps a little more favorable to them than happened a decade ago. One or both of those chambers could flip, but it is much harder than it appears on paper.
And then there's Pennsylvania, where, again, Democrats have a non-gerrymandered map for the first time in 10 years. But that is by no means a certainty that Dems can finally break the Republican stranglehold on the legislature there.
That's true. It's likely to be a two-cycle endeavor. I do believe it will happen this decade. I'm just not sure it will happen on November 8th, 22.
Now, you note, part of the feature of your newsletter is, also talking about who's spending, who's playing in these races. You know, for example, you note in Pennsylvania that there haven't been a lot of digital ads supporting or opposing candidates, but Planned Parenthood is one notable exception. From your 30,000 foot view of all 50 states, is this a typical cycle in terms of where a lot of these independent groups are playing and how much, or is each cycle different, or is this one decidedly different from past cycles?
I'm really glad you asked about Planned Parenthood spending at the state ledge level in Pennsylvania, because unlike say Michigan, voters cannot affirmatively place ballot measures before voters the way they can in Michigan. Ballot measures, constitutional amendments have to be generated by the legislature, which is now controlled by Republicans. And what they have to do to get something on the ballot is pass it through two separate sessions of the legislature. Mm-hmm. No gubernatorial veto. A Democratic governor cannot stop this. It would be up to voters. And what Republicans did this past session, or this current session, I should say, is pass a constitutional amendment that would remove the right to have a safe and legal abortion from the state constitution. It would enshrine a constriction on abortion rights and freedom in the state constitution. It passed last session. If Republicans stay in control of the legislature, it will probably pass again early next session, and it could be on the ballot as soon as spring. Republicans would love a low turnout election to hopefully pass that. It would be a situation like Kansas. Voters will have to vote no to keep it out of the Constitution. So the fact that Planned Parenthood is looking ahead and trying to keep Republicans from winning a majority again to block this measure from getting to the ballot is very smart and makes a lot of sense.
And there's something somewhat similar in Michigan with Proposal 3 that would enshrine reproductive freedom in the state constitution. And that's a yes vote.
It's all very confusing.
Right. Yep. That one would be a yes vote. But its existence there was not guaranteed when some Michigan Republicans were playing fast and loose with the rules.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a committee that mostly has been just sort of not a rubber stamp, but just observe. It's a formality to move a ballot question beyond the petition stage and actually put it on the ballot for the fall. Language has to be approved, things like that. And the Republicans on that committee decided to, throw their weight around, and they tried to block it. And the state Supreme Court said, you can't do that. Your beef with it was some spacing issues. Are you serious? This is going on the ballot. Sorry.
Technicality is putting it generously.
Yeah.
Shall we say. You get into, state parties and the amount of money that they spend. And we've talked previously about the alphabet soup of groups that are out there, national especially. But, on Monday, we're going to talk about some of the, state groups as well. But with the focus just on state parties, I wonder, because, again, you look, coast to coast at state level politics. I'm not going to say all state parties are the same, but what I'm looking for is any outliers. Are there certain state parties that are either known to be especially aggressive or known to be especially well funded, or that do anything different, or state parties pretty much the same all over in terms of the amount of power, influence, money, creativity, what have you? Does anything stand out?
Oh gosh, they're very, very different from state to state. And in fact, I'm glad you brought it up. Wisconsin happens to have a very strong state party in another sort of outlying thing beyond just being strong and well-funded and very smart. It's a state party that is rare in that it also works to help elect Democrats to the legislature. Most state parties are beholden to their federal office holders and their statewides. There's usually a separate campaign apparatus in a state that only raises money for these state ledge races. It's a different type of money than federal races. It's, a state party serves the state executive when there is one. It's a kind of a traditional thing. The current chair of the state party of Wisconsin has mixed that up in a really satisfying way. The party, I mean, again, separate types of money, separate accounts. It's all very weedy and whatnot, but the party is fully behind the state ledge operation in Wisconsin in a way I wish it were in other states.
Not to mention the way that Ben Wickler can get together crossover events like Veep and the West Wing casts, you know, getting together recently. Very creative and working very well for the state Democratic Party. Carolyn Fidler, always fun. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
That's Friday. We're just going to stick with the Yacht Rock theme here, clearly. Welcome back. We're heading into the weekend, and we're heading out of a week that features not one, but two debates for the two marquee races for Wisconsin, for governor and for U.S. Senate. And in the one that took place last night between Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, if you missed our coverage earlier, plenty of barbs, insults, you could say, were exchanged between the two. There was there were accusations of abusing taxpayer money from each one of them. Johnson accused Barnes of abusing taxpayer money through the cost of his security detail. Barnes, you know, responded that the senator should be so audacious, talking about the money that's been spent reimbursing Ron Johnson, you know, to and from his Florida vacation home, which, you know, an ethics complaint was filed at one point, but was later found that Johnson was complying with, you know, the Senate rules as they exist. There also was a debate in the debate on, you know, January 6th and whether Ron Johnson was as pro-law enforcement as he's made out to be. Johnson attacked Barnes for his past support of reducing funding for police departments and ending cash bail. Barnes accused Johnson of being a hypocrite for saying that, you know, he's soft on crime while the senator has downplayed violence during the January 6th insurrection. Barnes said that the talk about the senator's support for law enforcement is not real. It's not true. He called these protesters patriots. He called them tourists, the same people who were beating up police officers in the Capitol. We learned so much more about the January 6th attack from the Special Congressional Committee yesterday. We've mentioned that the committee has decided to subpoena Donald Trump to try to compel him to testify about his knowledge of the extent to which he planned and incited an insurrection that turned violent. And was the violence, you know, part of the plan, part of the intent? Was it a feature rather than a bug? In one of the most riveting exhibits, the committee showed some previously unseen footage of congressional leaders phoning for help during the assault, even as Trump refused to call off the mob, despite many people making personal pleas to him. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi can be seen on a call with the governor of neighboring Virginia, explaining that as she shelters with others, that, you know, they need National Guard help. Pelosi says, quote, "They're breaking the law in many different ways, and quite frankly, much of it is at the instigation of the President of the United States." The footage also portrays Vice President Mike Pence, not Trump, stepping in to help calm the violence, telling Pelosi and others that he has spoken with Capitol Police as Congress was planning to resume its session that night to certify Joe Biden's election as president. The video all came from Pelosi's daughter, Alexandra, who is a documentary filmmaker. Also, in never-before-seen Secret Service messages, the panel produced evidence that extremist groups provided a lot of the muscle in the fight for the Trump presidency, planning weeks before the attack of the planning that they were going to send a violent force to Washington. The Secret Service warned in a December 26th, 2020 email of a tip that members of the right-wing Proud Boys planned to outnumber the police in a march in Washington on January 6th. Cabinet members were also shown in interviews at yesterday's hearing, saying that you know, Trump did know that he had lost. In private, he understood, but that he continued the efforts to somehow overturn the election. And that's very key, because even though there are still people all around us in either denial or outright lying about 2020, they want to claim, or cling rather, to this notion that there were irregularities, that there were laws broken, that there were 2,000 mules out there, you know, to quote the propaganda film. There hasn't been anything. There hasn't been, you know, a shred of evidence. And Trump knew it, because he started planning all of this before Election Day. And so the testimony that we heard yesterday was important, that people understand, the ones that are still claiming their irregularities, they're not doing any favors for Donald Trump. He always knew there were not irregularities, that there were not illegal acts that were being conducted. And so even though you had a president making this plan, he was saying one thing and doing another behind the scenes. He knew that this was all needing to be overturned, that he did not win fair and square. Now, the committee's conducted more than 1,000 interviews. It's obtained countless documents. It's produced this sweeping probe of Trump's activities. And so under committee rules, probably the next step for the panel is to produce a report of its findings, likely in December. The committee will then dissolve 30 days after publication of that report, with a new Congress in January. It's worth noting that at least five people died in and in the aftermath of the January 6th attack, and that more than 850 people have been charged by the Justice Department. Some have already received lengthy prison sentences for their roles. And several other leaders, associates of the extremist Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, have all been charged with sedition. And Trump still faces various state and federal investigations over his actions in the election and in the aftermath. And so that takes us to Georgia, where that investigation is still going on about whether Trump and others illegally tried to interfere in the 2020 election. The Georgia prosecutor that's investigating this filed paperwork this morning seeking to compel testimony from a new batch of Trump allies, including former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich and former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. It's the Fulton County District Attorney who filed the petitions, seeking to have them and a White House lawyer and others testify next month before a special grand jury that's been seated to aid in her investigation. And this, of course, comes back to the phone call that Trump made and other efforts to find votes and otherwise overturn the election. And so we've been talking about the January 6th committee and the insurrection. We've been talking about the theft of classified and top secret material at Mar-a-Lago. We have this probe into Georgia and the election interference there. You have the New York inquiry into his business practices, and so forth and so on. And yet, we have somebody who is quite likely going to declare that he is a candidate for president in 2024. He may do so in the immediate aftermath of the midterms, if not before. And people have been asking, what does that mean? Does that mean he can't be indicted? Does it mean he can't be further investigated? The answer is no. While there's been kind of a standard not to have investigations of politicians, you know, close to an election, certainly not of announced candidates for president, there's nothing normal here anymore. This is simply, you know, new ground. It is something that, you know, nobody expected, but is, you know, nevertheless the times that we live in now. And so the old rules don't apply, because the old rules have been smashed to bits by people who will, you know, lie or undermine an election, or here at the state level, they will undermine the rule of law and disregard the will of the voters by continuing to serve on things like the State Natural Resources Board and the State Technical College Board. So I think as much as people would like to say, well, this will all blow over, I can't share that optimism, because that's a whole lot of people in the country who are just outwardly hostile. Go back to. So it's something we'll continue to follow, but we have to follow it on many fronts. And as we do, as each one of these come up, we'll talk to various guests. I believe we're going to talk to U.S. Attorney Jim Santel next week again about what the January 6th committee learned yesterday, so that, you know, this should never become normal. And I think that's what we're really getting at here, is we should not normalize the attempts to embrace authoritarianism rather than democracy. Let's turn our attention now to entertainment coming up. And is it really time to say goodbye to Laurie Strode, the character by Jamie Lee Curtis, in the movie Halloween Ends, which promises some kind of conclusion to the Michael Myers saga, which has been going on for 45 years now. Aaron, I've seen the first Halloween movie one time a million years ago, nothing ever since. I'm hoping that you have, so that you can be my Halloween expert to say if you think this is actually going to be the last movie and will we move on to something else, or is this going to live forever like Marvel superhero movies?
Well, honestly, I only started getting into horror movies more recently, so I also have only seen the first one so far. But I hope it ends. I really hate when series just go on and on and on just because they make so much money. The story really suffers, and just like Marvel, a lot of them are still good, but it is more than a bit much sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other example of that is James Bond. And I think people think, well, it just always has the last because there will always be, you know, spy stories and what have you. But I think these franchises have to be finite because, you know, we all are, you know, like, let's take the Bourne movies. You know, Jason Bourne is going to get old at some point, you know. Is he still going to be jumping between buildings or jumping motorcycles over buses or whatever the case may be? You know, same goes for James Bond, same goes for, you know, things like this. You don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. Now, you can do it in ways that provide spinoffs, sequels, prequels. Witness Star Wars. You know, there's whoever thought a campy movie from 1977 would still be what it is today. But, you know, in that case, again, you had enough product with decent, you know, writing or acting or plot twists or, you know, creative special effects. I don't know that you can do that much more with horror movies. But again, like I said, Aaron, I'm not, I'm just not a horror movie watcher. And you're saying you're just getting into them now? Why the choice to start watching horror movies?
When I was younger, I just assumed I would be too terrified of them, so I never watched it. And then I started creeping towards it, watching more thriller movies like Alien, for example, or Get Out was a newer one. And I was like, you know what? These are actually really good. They tell great stories. And I am not afraid to go to sleep at night or anything like that. And also, I love campy movies. Like Star Wars is probably my favorite movie series, although I have some strong opinions about the sequel trilogy. But so I like all the old horror movies like Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff, where it's just ridiculous but fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've just got one of those, you know, weird things that I've always felt like my entertainment doesn't have to rely on, you know, somebody else dying. there's plenty of comedies, you know, you can even do mysteries or drama where there's, you know, threats of pending harm, but I've never been one to go for the gore, the slasher, the horror. And I think part of it is just being a journalist. I deal with bad news all the time and bad things happening to people. It's like, I don't necessarily need that.
That is very fair. That's like Saving Private Ryan, where you're like, you know, yes, they made it really realistic, but maybe a bit too much so.
Well, and that's an example of one that I watched it, you know, when it first came out, and that was it. I watched it the one time, and I'm glad I did. It was very graphic, but it was a very interesting story. But I don't need to see it anymore. You know, I saw the earlier version of that, I guess you could call it, a movie called The Longest Day. And, you know, it too is kind of a one-time only thing because for my entertainment, I would rather just sit and watch TMZ each night, even though I don't know who half the celebrities are on there anymore. We will wrap up this hour's visit coming up after the break. You're up north. Heard me say once or twice that the state has a record budget surplus of around $5 billion that Republicans are sitting on, squandering, hoping to give away rather than invest into the good people of Wisconsin. Looks like it's going to be more than that. Jason Stein, a former reporter who is now, I want to get the title right here, research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, has put out a tweet thread, as has J.R. Ross from WisPolitics, on some new state data that shows tax collections came in even better than expected in 2022, swelling the surplus to never seen before levels. Taxes flowing into Wisconsin's main fund grew 5%, or just under $1 billion. In January, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau had projected they would fall by 3.2%. Now, inflation does, you know, cut into that, but what this is saying is that Wisconsin's economy continues to be extremely healthy, continues to generate business. While that does, you know, play a factor in inflation, it also is why we have such high employment and why we're going to have a high surplus, because business has been good in Wisconsin. Now it's just a question of what happens with that surplus, and a lot of that depends on what happens on November 8th, an election that we continue following, including one Luke Mathers, who is here to tell us more about the civic media empire and the way that politics, elections, and just life in Wisconsin is being covered on these fine radio stations. And we're going to turn this into a drinking game now when we say fine, you know, because I'm going to break us of that.
There you go.
Because don't let the emperor hear you, you know, saying fine all the time.
It's an excellent expanding network. That's what it is. It's excellent.
Do you know what I called up just this morning? I got to go.
That's the emperor.
That's what happens if you say fine one more time.
That's the emperor just shocking you.
Yep. There you go. You know what I stumbled upon for the first time? I'm sure it's old news for you, but when we talk about the empire of civic media and its coverage map, I haven't seen this coverage map. I'm looking at the civicmedia.us website right now, and you know, when there's a thing right at the top that says coverage area, and you now get to see all the stations and how much territory is covered on this really good network of stations.
Yeah, that's brand new as of yesterday. That went live yesterday, and it went live after I appeared with you here on this fine show with Up North.
Oh, there it is. Fine.
So I didn't get to tease it yesterday. I got to see it earlier this week as we were working out some of the kinks. I saw the beta version of it. But yes, there is an interactive map that you can go on civicmedia.us now. You can see all the shows. You can see all the stations, and as part of the stations, you can see the signal coverage of our stations on civic media.
And it's going to grow more.
Yes. There's also the expanded aspect of all of our different station feeds are adding and growing on the civic media app. So if you download the civic media app wherever apps are downloaded on your fine smartphone devices, you can see the growing list of all the news talk and country music stations that we have. So excellent programming there. There's some stations that people may not know are part of the civic media team as well, because we do have that country music platform. So WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCO in Richland Center, and some more country music stations to be added to the network as well. But they do get our news talk at the top of the hour, our news hits, the civic media newscast that we do here for local and regional Wisconsin news, does play out on the country music stations, but they don't have the talk lineup that we have for our news talk stations. So you can see all of the different stations on that map. You can also hear all of those different stations on the Civic on the app. You can hear the stations on the website. You can now see the stations. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of things that we're doing here at Civic Media.
Yeah. So in terms of those shows, maybe any of them have told you what they're plotting, planning, and scheming for the day? And
yeah.
Yes?
Absolutely.
Yes? Oh, do
absolutely.
Tell.
Absolutely. So up next on this fine network across
fine.
Almost all of them. Yeah, I did it. See, you got a drink for me. I left my coffee in the other room. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. She's going to be joined by Jesse Apoyan at the top of the show to kick off at the 11 a.m. hour. Then Sarah Godlewski, state treasurer of Wisconsin, is going to share some information with Kristen about her new PAC, Women Win Wisconsin, the Triple W. Then at 12:30, she's going to be joined
by... Hold on. Just stop right there. Just right there. Are those not three of the most powerful women in Wisconsin currently, right now? Kristen Bry, Sarah Godlewski, and...
Jesse Apoyan? Yeah, it's up there.
Jesse O'Point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think right now, well, not powerful, influential.
Yes.
When you think of some of the most influential women in Wisconsin, I mean, that might be right there. That we who can we add and to that show today, and we would have like the Mount Rushmore, you know, of influencers. I mean, we could put Charlie Behrens in a dress, but, you know, we'd have to come up with something else here. All right,
Charlie Burns was on her show.
As you were telling us more about Kristen's show.
Yeah, Charlie was on Kristen's show earlier this week. So it's been a busy week for As Goes Wisconsin. But Kristen will then also be joined by John Plagman, who has started Sober at Lambeau. It's the yellow section yellow at Lambeau. Okay. And so if you want to hear a little bit more about that story, about what Section Yellow is at Lambeau Field, John will be joining Kristen at 12:30. And then at 1:30 to round out the show, Professor Mike Wagner, who has been a guest on your program. I was going to say an F word program, the fine program of Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, but Professor Mike Wagner will be joining Kristen as well to be talking about the course correcting around misinformation. So that's going to be what's going on for As Goes Wisconsin throughout Kristen's 3 hours. Then Chad Holmes had a little bit of a abbreviated show yesterday for the Chad Holmes show. And so he's going to be joined by a school board member as well as previewing the final regular season week for the high school football season up in Wausau. You'll be able to hear previews of that. And then three different games across the Bull Falls network this evening for that high school football final week of regular season. And Dueling Tangents also had an abbreviated show yesterday. So Brian and I are going to be talking about the headlines, getting a little bit more about what's going on with the January 6th finale that occurred yesterday, as well as the debate performance. There was a couple of zingers in there between Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes. So you can be sure we're going to be talking about those. And then we've got an extended coverage from the Devil's Advocates from 4 to 7 p.m. We'll lead you straight up to Civic Media covering the gubernatorial debate this evening, beginning at 7 p.m. across the Fine Network. Now I'm almost doing it just because I know that you're going to drink.
Your head.
Yeah, it's there. It's like, oh. But Civic Media will be broadcasting that debate at 7 p.m. And so the Devils will take you up to the debate, and you can listen on all of the Civic Media stations. And then if you miss the debate at 7 p.m. because you got local high school sports in your market on Civic Media, you can tune in on Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. for the replay.
Boy, that's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's busy, man. It's busy, busy, busy down here. We are staying busy. And you got snow. What the heck?
Like it's starting to melt now, but it was just it was depressing. It really was. Not gonna lie, I'm glad to. If I had a better sense of humor about it, I'd have played Christmas music this morning. But we'll save that for a future one. Thank you, Mr. Mathers. As Billy Joel tells us, the truth is told. You can get what you want, or you can just get old. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.